first time I saw Ellen Olenska was January 1872 at the opera. It was Faust, and the whole of New York was there. The soprano was plucking the petals off the daisy and singing, "He loves me, he loves me not," and I was able to look across to the Mingott's box and watch May gazing ecstatically at the stage. I saw her flush a delicate pink and glance down at the bouquet of lilies of the valley I'd sent her that afternoon.
A darling, how innocent she is.
I think that may have been the last time I ever felt such a clean, simple pleasure.
Lend me your opera glass, Hilda.
Oh, splendid set, eh, Newland?
Good evening, gentlemen. Silverton, Lawrence.
Well, upon my soul.
I followed the line of his glance and saw a slender woman who had just entered the Mingott's box. May's mother was offering her a seat. Her brown, curly hair was held in place by a narrow band of diamonds. She wore a rather low-cut velvet gown, and the whole of the opera house was staring at her.
Well, I didn't think the Mingotts would have tried it on.
The Countess Olenska.
Old Mrs. Mingott's granddaughter on the run from her husband.
I heard he was an awful brute.
The very worst. I knew him at Nice, a half-paralyzed, sneering fellow. When he wasn't with women, he was collecting china.
Paying any price for both, I understand.
Well, then she has every right to...
Yes, but she bolted with his secretary.
I heard of her a few months later, living alone in Venice. I believe her uncle went out to get her.
And now they're parading her at the opera.
To have her in the same box as young May.
I suppose it's part of the campaign to rehabilitate her. Granny Mingott's orders, no doubt.
I must go and say good evening to May and her mother. I hope you've told the Countess that we're engaged. I want you to let me announce it this evening at the ball.
But why should we bring it forward?
Because the Countess... I want to be able to stand by you against whatever nonsense people like Lawrence and Silverton...
You are so good to me.
The whole of New York must know we are family and that we'll stick together.
Why don't you tell my cousin yourself? She says she used to play with you when you were children. Go on, sit next to her.
Countess Olenska, good evening.
Newland Archer. We did used to play together, didn't we? You were a horrid boy and kissed me once behind a door. Oh, this brings it all back to me. I see everybody here in knickerbockers and pantalettes.
You have been away a very long time.
So long that I'm sure I'm dead and buried in this dear old place's heaven.
I could wish we hadn't had to tell everyone in such a crowd.
But even in the crowd, we're alone together, aren't we?
Sweet May, always. Let me kiss you.
Did you tell my cousin, Ellen?
No, I hadn't the chance after all.
Oh, well, you must then, for I didn't either, and I shouldn't like her to think...
Angel, of course I'll tell her. She's not here, though, is she?
No, she decided not to come at the last minute.
At the last minute?
Yes, she's awfully fond of dancing. But she suddenly made up her mind that her dress wasn't smart enough for a ball, though we thought it lovely, and so my aunt had to take her home.
May knew as well as I did the reason for her cousin's staying away. But I resolved never to let her see by the least sign that I was conscious of there being a shadow of a shadow on poor Ellen Olenska's reputation. The next day, May and her mother and I went to call on her grandmother, old Catherine Mingott, the matriarch of the clan. Because of her vast weight, she could no longer go up and downstairs, so she made her drawing room and bedroom downstairs, in a style reminiscent of rather scandalous scenes in French fiction. She could do what she liked, old Mrs. Mingott. She had inherited her husband's fortune and traveled the world, hobnobbing with dukes and ambassadors, and marrying two of her daughters into foreign aristocracy. She didn't care one fig for the niceties. She had even built her house out in an unfashionable wilderness near Central Park.
A pity my poor Ellen isn't here to congratulate you.
Never mind, Mother. Now, May, show her your engagement ring.
Here it is, Granny.
Oh, it's the newest setting. Of course, it shows the stone beautifully, but it looks a little bare to old-fashioned eyes.
Old-fashioned eyes, Augusta. I hope you don't mean mine. I like all the novelties. Very handsome. But it's the hand that sets off the ring, isn't it, Mr. Archer?
Indeed.
Mine was modeled in Rome by the great Ferrugiani. You should have May's done. No doubt he'll have it done, my child. Her hand is large. It's these modern sports that spread the joints. But the skin is white. And when's the wedding to be?
Oh,
as soon as it ever can. If only you'll back me up, Mrs. Mingott.
We must give them time to get to know each other a little better, Mama.
Fiddlesticks! Everybody in New York has always known everybody. Let the young man have his way, my dear. Don't wait till the bubble's off the wine. Marry them before Lent. I may catch pneumonia any winter now, and I want to give the wedding breakfast.
Oh, Granny,
oh,
thank
Mother,
you.
How can you say such a
That's
thing?
That's exceedingly Let's handsome leave. Of you, madam. Countess Olenska. Beaufort.
Ellen, how lovely to see you.
Ah, Beaufort, this is a rare favor.
Thanks, I wish it might happen oftener. I'm generally so tied down at the bank. But I met the Countess Ellen in Madison Square, and she was good enough to let me walk home with her.
I hope the house will be gayer now that Ellen's here. Mm-hmm. Sit down,
Countess,
Beaufort. Push up.
Of course you know already about our engagement. May scolded me for not giving you the news last night at the opera.
Yes, I'm so glad. But one doesn't tell such things first in a crowd. Goodbye, Newland. Come and see me someday.
Look, it's snowing. Isn't Grandma Mingott wonderful?
I could wish she might keep Ellen a little in check.
Mama!
She seemed in excellent spirits as well.
She likes you, Newland. You've always been one of her favorites.
Well, the next evening, Sillerton came to dine. Mother always invited him when she wanted to test which way the wind was blowing.
The Beauforts asked that Struthers woman to their ball, Sillerton.
Certain nuances escape Beaufort, my dear Adeline.
Oh, Beaufort is a vulgar man.
But his house is so beautiful, Mama.
Money, Janie. Nothing but money.
One might expect a banker to have money.
One might expect an Englishman who is married into New York society to have a better sense of propriety.
And the Countess Olenska, was she at the ball?
Ah, yes. Newland's new cousin.
No, Janie, she was not at the ball.
Perhaps the Beauforts don't know her.
Oh, Mrs. Beaufort may not, but Beaufort certainly does, for she was seen walking up Fifth Avenue with him this afternoon by the whole of New York.
Mercy! I wonder what she was wearing. At the opera, I know she had on dark blue velvet, gathered below the bust, like a nightgown.
Janie! It was, at any rate, in better taste not to go to the ball.
I don't think it was a question of taste with her, Mother. May said she decided that the dress in question wasn't smart enough.
Oh, poor Ellen. We must always bear in mind what an eccentric upbringing Medora gave her after her dear parents died. What can you expect of a girl who was allowed to wear black satin at her coming-out ball?
Oh, don't I remember her in it, poor girl.
It's odd that she should have kept such an ugly name as Ellen. I should have changed it to Elaine.
Why Elaine?
I don't know. It sounds more Polish.
It sounds more conspicuous, and that can hardly be what she wishes.
Why not? Why shouldn't she be conspicuous if she chooses? She had the bad luck to make a wretched marriage, but I don't see that's a reason for hiding her head as if she were the culprit.
That, I suppose, is the line the Mingotts mean to take.
I heard she means to get a divorce.
I hope she will.
Janie, Newland, that's enough.
Fine library, Newland.
Yes, I receive regular parcels from my bookseller in London. A cigar, sir?
Oh, thank you. Do you know, your unhappy countess was living with her husband's secretary for a while after he helped her to get away. Somebody met them at Lausanne together.
Living together? Mm. Well, why not? Who had the right to make her life over if she hadn't? I'm sick of the hypocrisy that would bury alive a woman of her age if her husband prefers to live with harlots. Women ought to be free. As free as we are. I sat up a long while after Sillerton left, wondering what on earth had driven me to such a defense of Ellen Olenska. No decent woman would ever claim that kind of freedom. I looked at the photo of May I kept on the table, her frank forehead, serious eyes, and smiling, innocent mouth. And I realized she was frank and innocent because she knew nothing. Her innocence was the careful creation of a great conspiracy of mothers and grandmothers forming what I, as a man, was supposed to want, so that I could have the pleasure of smashing it like an image made of snow. Oh, how could we ever know each other? Since I, as a decent fellow, had a duty to conceal my past from her, my affair with poor Mrs. Rushworth, and she, as a marriageable girl, had a duty to have no past to conceal. At the very moment of my betrothal, when I should have been full of cloudless hopes, I was pitched into a coil of dark and cynical speculation. And 2 days later, Ellen Olenska was the cause of even more upheaval.
Newland, I hardly know how to tell you. The most appalling snub. You know my brother Lovell is throwing a dinner for Ellen.
Indeed.
Inviting the cream of New York, all the inner circle. Well, they have all turned him down.
Everyone, Mrs. Welland?
Without so much as the breath of an excuse.
I can guess who's behind this. That wretch Lawrence Lefferts.
Well, the only people who've accepted are the Beauforts. Newland, do you think it's possible your dear mother might be able to have a word with your cousins, the van der Luydens?
Henry and Louisa van der Luyden were our aristocracy, direct descendants of the first Dutch governor of Manhattan, and related by pre-revolutionary marriages to French and British peers of the realm. They were grand enough to be above our social sphere, in a kind of super-terrestrial twilight. They were our final arbiters on all matters of rank and etiquette.
So, my dear Henry, May's mother and I both felt that, especially in view of Newland's engagement, you and Louisa ought to know.
Newland, you really think this snub is due to some intentional interference of Lawrence Leffert?
I'm certain of it, sir. Lawrence has been having a rather obvious affair with the postmaster's wife in their village. And whenever poor Gertrude Lefferts begins to suspect anything, he gets up a fuss of this kind to show how awfully moral he is. He's using Madame Olenska as a lightning rod. I've seen him try the same thing before.
Imagine Lawrence Lefferts pronouncing on anyone's social position, Henry.
It is the principle that I dislike. As long as a member of a well-known family is backed up by that family, it should be considered final.
That is exactly my point. If we don't stand together, there'll be no such thing as society left.
Louisa's relative, the Duke of St. Austrey, arrives next week from London. We are inviting a few friends to meet him here. Only a little dinner with a reception afterwards. I am sure Louisa will be as glad as I am if Countess Olenska will let us include her among our guests.
The following week, I watched Ellen Olenska make her entrance into the van der Luydens' drawing room. She arrived rather late, one hand still ungloved, fastening a bracelet about her wrist. People said she had lost her looks, but they were wrong. She was pale, and maybe a little older looking than her 30 years, but she moved with the mysterious authority of beauty. She was quiet. Quiet in her movement and in the tones of her low-pitched voice, not showy in the New York fashion. But she drew the admiring glance of every man in the room. And unlike the other ladies, she moved freely among us, selecting whom she would talk with.
May I sit beside you, Newland? I've had quite enough of the Duke of St. Austrey.
Countess, you knew the Duke before?
Oh, yes. We used to see him every winter at Nice. He's very fond of gambling. He used to come to the house a great deal. He's the dullest man I have ever met.
Really?
May is a darling. I've seen no young girl in New York so handsome and so intelligent. Are you very much in love with her?
As much as a man can be.
How delightful. And you found each other for yourselves. It was not in the least arranged for you?
Of course not.
You must forgive me. Everything here is good. That was bad where I've come from.
I'm so sorry. But you are among friends here, you know.
Yes, I know. I want to become a complete American again, like the Mingotts and the Wellands and all the other good people here tonight. Oh, here's May. You'll want to hurry away to her.
Oh, I have so many rivals. You see, she's already surrounded.
Then stay with me a little longer.
Yes. Let me stay.
Countess Olenska.
Ellen.
We are neglecting you. May I show you the family portraits?
Aunt Welland, Mr. van der Luyden, you are too kind. Tomorrow then, after 5, Newland, I shall expect you.
Tomorrow.
It was good of you, Newland, to devote yourself so unselfishly to Countess Olenska. Your cousin Henry told me that he really must rescue you.
Ah, yes.
He says the Duke thinks May is the handsomest girl in the room.
As Mrs. Welland spoke, I was amused to see Lawrence lead his wife up to be introduced to the Countess, followed by a number of other recalcitrant couples who had previously declined to meet her. I was at Countess Olenska's house for 5:30 the next day. It was the other end of West 23rd Street. Her neighbors were dressmakers, bird stuffers, riders, and there was a sense of dilapidation about the whole place. But when her Italian maid let me in, I saw that she had furnished it with charm. There were slender tables of dark wood, a delicate Greek bronze on the chimneypiece, Italian pictures.
Ah, Newland. Well, how do you like my funny little house? To me, it's like heaven.
You've arranged it delightfully.
Well, I suppose what I like is the blessedness of its being here, in my own country, and of being alone in it.
You like so much to be alone?
Yes, so long as my friends keep me from feeling lonely. Nastasia will bring the tea presently. Well, this is the hour I like best, don't you?
I was afraid you'd forgotten the hour. Beaufort must have been very engrossing.
Why, have you waited long? Mr. Beaufort took me to see a number of houses, since my relatives disapprove of this one.
This street is not fashionable.
Fashion. But I suppose I've lived too independently, at any rate. I want to do what you all do. I want to feel cared for and safe.
And that's what your friends want you to feel.
Being here is like being taken on holiday, when one has been a good little girl and done all one's lessons.
Last night, New York laid itself out for you.
How kind the van der Luydens are. Everyone seems to have such esteem for them.
The van der Luydens are the most powerful influence in New York society. Unfortunately, owing to her health, they receive very seldom.
Isn't that perhaps the reason?
The reason?
For the great influence that they make themselves so rare. Grazie, Nastasia. You'll explain these things to me?
Oh, it's you who are opening my eyes to things I've looked at so long that I've ceased to see them.
Then we can help each other. You must tell me just what to do.
There are plenty of people to tell you what to do.
My aunts, my dear old granny. They're all vexed with me for setting up for myself, but I had to be free.
I understand how you feel. Still, your family can advise you. Show you the way.
Is New York such a labyrinth? I thought it so straight up and down, like Fifth Avenue, and with all the cross streets numbered. If you knew how I like it for that. The straight up and downness and the big honest labels on everything.
Everything may be labeled, but everybody is not.
Oh, there are only two people here who make me feel as if they understood what I mean and could explain things to me. You and Mr. Beaufort.
Well, don't let go of your relatives' hands. Your Granny Mingott, Mrs. Wellen, they want to help you.
Oh, I know. I know. But on condition they don't hear anything unpleasant. Aunt Welland put it in those very words when I tried. Does no one want to know the truth here, Newland? The real loneliness is living among all these kind people who only ask one to pretend.
Madame Olenska. Oh, don't, Ellen. Ellen, don't cry.
Does no one cry here either? I suppose there's no need to. In heaven.
Next day, I persuaded May to escape from church with her parents and come for a walk in the park instead. It was a brilliant, blue, frosty day, and May looked radiant.
It's so delicious, waking every morning to smell lilies of the valley in one's room.
Yesterday they came late. I hadn't time in the morning.
Oh, but your remembering each day to send them makes me love them so much more than if you'd given a standing order. And they came every morning on the minute, like one's music teacher. As I know Gertrude Lefferts did when she and Lawrence were engaged.
Ah, they would. When I sent your lilies yesterday, I saw some fiery yellow roses and packed them off to the Countess Olenska. Was that right?
Well, how dear of you. It's odd she didn't mention it. She lunched with us today. She spoke of Mr. Beaufort's having sent her wonderful orchids and Cousin Henry a whole hamper of carnations from Skuytercliff.
Oh, well, no wonder mine were overshadowed by Beaufort's.
Well, look at them skating, Newland. That girl in red.
Then I remembered that I had put no card with the yellow roses. How stupid to have mentioned them. I had no desire for my visit to Ellen to be a mystery, but it seemed best to change the topic. I'm sorry your mother still insists on a long engagement.
Aren't we very well off as we are?
We might be much better off. We might be all together, together. We might travel this spring.
That would be lovely, but Mother wouldn't understand us wanting to be so different.
Different? We're all as alike each other as those dolls cut out of the same folded paper. We're like patterns stenciled on a wall. Can't you and I strike out for ourselves, May?
Mercy, shall we elope?
Oh, if you would.
You do love me, Newland. I'm so happy.
But then why not be happier?
We can't behave like people in novels, though, can we?
Why not? Why not? Why not?
I'm not clever enough to argue with you, but that kind of thing is rather vulgar, isn't it?
Are you so much afraid of being vulgar?
Well, of course, I should hate it. So would you. Did I tell you I showed Ellen my ring? She thinks it the most beautiful setting she ever saw. I do love you, Newland, for being so artistic.
It was a couple of weeks after this that old Mr. Letterblair, the head of the law firm where I was a junior partner, summoned me to his office.
My dear Archer, I've sent for you to go into a little matter. A matter which, for the moment, I prefer not to mention to the other partners for family reasons.
Family?
The Mingott family. The older Mrs. Mingott sent for me yesterday. Her granddaughter, the Countess Olenska, wishes to sue her husband for divorce. In view of your prospective alliance with the family, I should like you to take the case.
I beg your pardon, sir, but just because of the prospective relationship, I should prefer your consulting one of the others.
The suggestion is not mine, but Mrs. Mingott's and her son's.
Her uncles ought to deal with this.
They have. The family is opposed to the Countess's idea, but she insists on a legal opinion.
Does she want to marry again?
I believe it is suggested, but she denies it.
Then
will you oblige me, Mr. Archer, by first looking through these papers?
When I read them, I was disturbed. In particular, there was a despicable letter from the Count to his wife. This was not a matter for strangers' eyes. Delicacy dictated that I should do as Letterblair wished, and speak with the Countess personally.
Ah, Newland, come in close to the fire and warm yourself. Beaufort, make a space for him.
Mm-hmm. Beaufort leant against the mantelshelf, smiling down on Ellen, who sat half-reclined on the sofa, smoking. She was wearing a red velvet robe bordered down the front with glossy black fur. Her head was propped on her hand, and her wide sleeve left the arm bare to the elbow. She looked like a figure in a French painting.
You'd better take all your furs and a hot water bottle to visit Skuytercliff.
Why? Is the house so cold?
No, but Mrs. van der Leyden is.
She came herself to invite me. Granny says I must certainly go.
Oh, Granny would, of course. And I say it's a shame you're going to miss the supper I'd planned for you next Sunday with lots of jolly musicians.
That does tempt me. Except the other evening at Mrs. Struthers, I've not met a single artist since I've been here.
What kind of artists? I know one or two painters, very good fellows, that I could bring to see you if you'd allow me.
Painters? In New York?
That would be charming, Newland. But I was really thinking of dramatic artists and singers. My husband's house was always full of them.
You miss that?
It's such fun to meet new people. Don't you mind seeing the same faces every day?
New York is dying of dullness. But when I try to liven it up for you, you go back on me. Now, come! Sunday is your last chance. Campanini leaves next week for Philadelphia, and I've a private room and a Steinway, and they'll sing all night for me.
How delicious. May I think it over and write to you tomorrow morning?
Why not now?
I have to talk business with Newland for a little while.
Uh-huh. I say, Newland, if you can persuade the Countess to stop in town, you're included in the supper.
You know painters, then? You live in their milieu?
Oh,
Not exactly. I don't know that the arts have a milieu here, any of them. They're more like a very thinly settled outskirt.
But you care for such things?
Immensely. When I'm in Paris or London, I never miss an exhibition.
I used to care immensely, too. But now I want to try not to. I want to cast off my old life and become just like everybody else here.
He'll never be like everybody else.
Oh, don't say that. I want to wipe out all the past.
I know. Mr. Letterblair has told me.
You mean you can manage it for me instead of Mr. Letterblair? Oh, that would be so much easier.
I am here to give a legal opinion.
I want to be free.
I understand that.
Then you'll help me.
First, perhaps I ought to know a little more.
Well, you know about my husband, my life with him.
Yes.
What more is there? In this country, are such things tolerated? I'm a Protestant. Our church doesn't forbid divorce in such cases.
No. But of course you know that if your husband chooses to fight the case, as he threatens to...
Yes.
He can say things that might be damaging to you. Say them publicly. So they could harm you, even if...
If?
I mean, no matter how unfounded they are.
What harm could such accusations do me here?
New York society is a very small world compared with one you've lived in. Our legislation favors divorce. Our social customs don't.
Never?
Well, not if the woman, however injured, however irreproachable, has exposed herself by any unconventional actions to offensive insinuations.
Yes. Well, that's what my family tell me.
It's not unnatural.
Our family, for you'll be my cousin soon.
I hope so.
And you take their view?
What should you gain that would compensate for the possibility of a lot of beastly rumors?
But my freedom, is that nothing?
Aren't you free as air as it is? Mr. Letterblair tells me the financial question has been settled.
Oh, yes.
Well then, is it worthwhile to risk the scandal? Think of the newspapers. It's stupid and unjust, but one can't make over society.
No.
The individual in such cases is nearly always sacrificed to the collective interest. The Mingotts, the Wellands, the Vanderlyns. If I didn't show you honestly how they judge such questions, it wouldn't be fair of me, would it?
No. It wouldn't be fair. Very well. I will do what you wish.
I really do want to help you.
You do help me. Good night, my cousin.
I slept badly that night and tried to set my mind at ease by sending her 2 dozen yellow roses in the morning. I had time on my hands to brood, for May and her parents had gone away on their annual winter holiday to St. Augustine. Indeed, May wrote me on the subject of her cousin.
Ellen likes you so much. And you know, though she doesn't show it, she's still very lonely and unhappy. I think she's been used to lots of things we haven't got. Wonderful music, and picture shows, and celebrities. Artists and authors and all the clever people you admire. Granny can't understand her wanting anything but lots of dinners and clothes. But I can see that you're almost the only person in New York who can talk to her about what she really cares for.
A few days later, I spotted her with Mrs. Beaufort and Sillerton at the theater. The dumb parting of two lovers on stage. The man, turning back unnoticed to kiss the hem of his lover's dress, struck me so painfully that I was on the point of leaving the theater when Mrs. Beaufort waved me over to their box.
Newland, do you think he will send her a bunch of yellow roses tomorrow morning?
You mean the play?
Of course.
I was taking the image home with me.
What do you do while May is away?
I stick to my work.
I have done what you advised.
I'm glad.
Sometimes life is difficult.
I know.
I wanted to tell you that I do feel you were right, and that I'm grateful to you.
As I left the theater, I ran across my old friend, Ned Winsett, the journalist.
Nolan! Who's the dark lady in Beaufort's box?
This is not for the newspaper, I hope.
No. She's a neighbor of mine. She's been awfully kind to my little boy. He fell down her area chasing his kitten. She carried him in with his knee all beautifully bandaged, and my wife was too dazzled to ask her name.
Countess Olenska, a granddaughter of old Mrs. Mingott.
Oh, How does a countess happen to live in our slum?
Because she doesn't care a hang about where she lives or about any of our little social signposts.
Been in bigger places, I suppose. Is she as lovely as she looks?
How's work? Busy?
Well, I can tailor a love story neatly around 2 fashion plates and an advertisement for temperance drinks.
Your criticism, your literary work.
No market for it. Who in New York wants challenge and intellectual debate?
We are half stifled. But that's why we need writers like you.
I have to earn my keep. Well, you're free. Why don't you make a change in the place? Hey, why don't you go into politics?
An honest man in American politics? They don't want us.
Who's they? Why don't you society fellas all get together and be they yourselves?
They are bosses and immigrants. Decent people have to fall back on sport or culture.
Culture? The last remnants of the old European tradition dying out for lack of cross-fertilization? You decent people. You're like the pictures on the walls of a deserted house. You'll never amount to anything till you roll up your sleeves and get right down in a muck. That or emigrate. God, if I could emigrate.
It was Ned Winsett's poverty that drove him to this kind of tirade. One could no more emigrate than one could roll up one's sleeves and get down into the muck of politics or money-making. A gentleman simply stayed at home and abstained. But in the morning, after I had scoured the town in vain for yellow roses and sat at my desk at Letterblair's for 2 hours performing trivial tasks and reading the newspaper, the margin of my life, which contained those things I cared for, books, art, travel, seemed not only narrow, but also dangerously threatened by my impending marriage. I sent a note to Madame Olenska, asking if I might call. But her reply did not come for 3 days.
I ran away the day after I saw you at the play, and the kind van der Luydens have taken me in. I wanted to be quiet and think things over. You were right in telling me how kind they were. I feel myself so safe here at Skuytercliff. I wish that you were with us. Yours sincerely, Ellen.
Is Countess Olenska in?
Mr. van der Luyden is at home, sir, but I believe he's finishing his nap, and Mrs. van der Luyden and the Countess have driven to afternoon service in the village.
I'll stable my horse and walk to meet the ladies. Thank you. Instinct took me along the footpath towards the village, and I was soon rewarded by the sight of a slight figure in a red cloak hurrying towards me.
Newland, you've come.
Ellen Olenska. So where's Mrs. van der Luyden?
She has driven over to see her old aunts at Rhinebeck. I wanted to walk. I needed to breathe.
I came to see what you were running away from.
Shall we walk on? Well, what does it matter now you're here to protect me?
Ellen, what is it? You must tell me.
Let's run a race first. My feet are freezing to the ground.
Oh, what's beyond this gate?
The old patroon's house from before they built Skuytercliff. They use it for a summer house.
Well, shall we look?
Oh, I knew you'd come.
That shows you wanted me to.
May I ask you to take care of me?
I didn't need any asking.
You mean I'm so evidently helpless? What a poor thing you must all think me. But women here seem never to feel the need any more than the blessed in heaven.
Ellen, why won't you tell me what's happened?
Does anything ever happen in heaven? I will tell you, but where? One can't be alone for a minute in that great seminary of a house with all the doors wide open and always a servant bringing tea or a log for the fire or the newspaper. I always feel as if I were on the stage before a dreadfully polite audience that never applauds.
Look, the patroon's house is open.
Well, it was this morning. I wanted to see it, and Mr. van der Luyden had the fire lit so we might stop there on the way back from morning service. It's
It's still unlocked. What luck. Come in and we can have a quiet talk.
Yes.
You're laughing now. But when you wrote me, you were unhappy.
Yes, but I can't feel unhappy when you're here.
Oh, I shan't be here long.
No, I know. But I'm improvident. I live in the moment when I'm happy.
Her words stole through me like a temptation. What if she had been running from me? I made myself move away from her, to stare out of the window, so she should not see the hope in my face.
We shan't be missed at the house for another hour.
Ellen, if you really wanted me to come, tell me what it is you're running from. I imagined her, almost heard her, stealing up behind me to throw her light arms about my neck. My soul and my body were throbbing with the miracle to come. When my eyes mechanically received the image of a heavily coated man with his fur collar turned up, hurrying along the path to the house. Ah, so that was it.
No, I didn't know.
Hello, Beaufort. Come in. Madame Olenska is expecting you.
Ellen, there you are at last. Now, you have led me the devil of a dance. Why couldn't you tell a fellow where you were going?
I am at liberty, surely, to visit friends when I please.
Aye, but while you are gadding about, I have found you the perfect little house, which must be spoken for instantly, or it'll be snapped up.
I am sorry for your trouble.
If only this new dodge of talking along a wire had been a bit nearer perfection, I might have told you this from town and been toasting my toes before the club fire, instead of tramping after you through the snow.
That week, my books from London arrived. There was a new collection of Alphonse Daudet's brilliant tales, and a novel called Middlemarch, which had attracted interesting reviews. But Ellen Olenska's face stared up at me from every page. I heard nothing from her, and our hour together at Skuytercliff began to seem like a dream. Can you pass the coffee, please, Janie?
Mercy, how pale you look, Newland.
I've noticed that lately you've been coughing. I do hope you're not letting yourself be overworked.
I'm fine, Mother. Just not sleeping terribly well. Maybe I need a change of scene.
I think he's pining for May.
That evening I received a note.
Come late tomorrow. I must explain to you. Ellen.
In the course of yet another sleepless night, I considered a variety of ways of answering her. That on which I decided, in the morning, was to board a boat that was leaving for St. Augustine.
Newland, has anything happened?
Yes, May. I found I had to see you.
Oh, how lovely. Oh, Mother and Father don't breakfast till ever so late. Let's walk out to the orange grove.
Wait. Let me kiss you. Why? What is it?
I hope nobody sees.
Tell me what you've been up to.
I've just been rowing. It's so lovely on the river in the morning. Oh, then there's swimming, sailing, riding. The Selfridge Marys came down for 3 weeks because Kate had bronchitis, and we were planning to lay out a lawn tennis court on the sands, but no one but Kate and I had rackets.
Later that afternoon, May accompanied her father on a drive, and Mrs. Welland raised the topic of Countess Olenska.
I'm afraid Ellen's ideas are not at all like ours. Oh, she was so young when Medora took her back to Europe.
But European society is not given to divorce. Countess Olenska thought she would be conforming to American ideas in asking for her freedom.
Well, that is just like the extraordinary things that foreigners invent about us. They think we dine at 2 o'clock and countenance divorce. But we do appreciate your persuading Ellen to give up the idea. Her grandmother and her Uncle Lovell could do nothing with her. Her changing her mind was entirely due to your influence. Oh, poor Ellen. She always was a wayward child. I wonder what her fate will be.
What we've all contrived to make it, is what I felt like answering. If you'd rather she should be Beaufort's mistress than some decent fellow's wife, you've gone the right way about it. Mrs. Welland's armor against any unpalatable truth was her invincible innocence. I wondered if May would grow to resemble her. I didn't want her to have that kind of innocence. The innocence that seals the mind against imagination and the heart against experience.
Oh, but of course, Newland, you felt that too. We all knew you were thinking of May.
I'm always thinking of May. If we could bring our wedding forward, we might travel to Granada. We could see the Easter ceremonies in Seville.
Easter in Seville? But it will be Lent next week.
Why shouldn't we be married in Lent?
Newland!
Well, soon after Easter, so we could sail at the end of April. I know I could arrange it at the office.
How can we?
Why should we dream away another year, May? Don't you understand how I want you for my wife?
I'm not sure if I do understand. Is it because you're not certain of continuing to care for me?
My God.
Is there someone else?
Between you and me?
Let us talk frankly, Newland. I've felt a difference in you since our engagement has been announced.
If I'd made a mistake, is it likely I should be imploring you to hasten our marriage?
Yes. You might want, once for all, to settle the question.
Well?
I knew there was someone else you were interested in before me. Everyone was talking about it 2 years ago at Newport. And once I saw you sitting together on the veranda at a dance. And when she came back into the house, her face was sad, and I felt sorry for her.
My dear child, was that it? If you only knew the truth.
Then there is a truth I don't know?
I meant the truth about the old story you speak of.
If you feel yourself in any way pledged, even if it means her getting a divorce, don't give her up because of me.
May, that friendship was over long ago. But I love your generosity because I agree that each case must be judged individually, irrespective of stupid conventions.
People must be true to their feelings.
Yes. But since you understand so well, can't you understand the uselessness of our submitting to foolish conventions? If there's no one between us, isn't that an argument for marrying quickly rather than for more delay?
Oh, Newland.
So, Newland, you kicked over the traces, did you? And was little May glad to see you down in Florida?
I hope she was, Mrs. Mingott. But after all, she wouldn't agree to what I'd gone down to ask for.
Wouldn't she, indeed? And what was that?
I wanted her to promise that we should be married in April. What's the use of wasting another year?
Ask Mama, I suppose. The usual story. Ah, these Mingotts, all alike. Born in a rut and you can't root them out of it. When I built this house, you'd have thought I was moving to California. Nobody ever had built above 40th Street. No, not one of them wants to be different. They're as scared of it as the smallpox. Ah, my dear Newland, there's not one of my kin that takes after me but my little Ellen. Now, why in the world didn't you marry my little Ellen?
Well, for one thing, she wasn't there to be married.
Oh, no, to be sure, more's the pity. And now it's too late.
Can't I persuade you to use your influence with the Wellands, Mrs. Mingott? I wasn't made for long engagements.
No, I can see that. You've got a quick eye. When you were a little boy, I've no doubt you liked to be helped first. Here's my Ellen now.
Granny.
I was just saying to him, my dear, why didn't you marry my little Ellen?
And what was his answer?
Oh, my darling, I leave you to find that out. He's been down to Florida to see his sweetheart.
Yes, I know. I went to see your mother, Newland, to ask where you'd gone. I sent a note that you never answered, and I was afraid you were ill.
I left unexpectedly, in a hurry. I was going to write to you from St. Augustine.
And, of course, once you were there, you never thought of me again.
Look at him, in such haste to get married that he rushed down to implore the silly girl on his knees. That's the way handsome Bob Spicer carried off my poor mother and then got tired of her before I was weaned. But there, you're not a Spicer, young man, luckily for you and for May. It's only my poor Ellen that has kept any of their wicked blood. The rest of them are all model Mingotts.
Surely, Granny, we can persuade them between us to do as he wishes.
I must go. Goodbye, Mrs. Mingott. Countess?
I'll walk you to the door.
When can I see you again?
whenever you like.
Tomorrow evening?
Yes, but early. I'm going out.
Ah, evening, Nolan.
Ned, I didn't know you were here.
Dear Mr. Archer, I am the Marchioness Medora Manson, Ellen's aunt.
I am delighted.
My Ellen has taken me in. I'm on my way to see my great friend, Dr. Carver. You don't know Dr. Agathon Carver, founder of the Valley of Love community.
I'm afraid I'm not...
Oh, New York, New York. How little the life of the spirit has reached it. But I see you do know Mr. Winsett.
Oh, yes. I reached him some time ago, but not by that route.
How do you know, Mr. Winsett? The spirit bloweth where it listeth. Oh, but do sit down, Mr. Archer. We've been having a delightful little dinner together, and my child has gone up to dress.
I'm afraid I must be off. Please tell Madame Olenska that we shall all feel lost when she abandons our street. This house has been an oasis.
Aha, but she won't abandon you. Poetry and art are the breath of life to her. It is poetry you write, Mr. Winsett.
Well, no, but I sometimes read it. Goodbye.
A caustic spirit. Un peu sauvage. Now, before Ellen comes, I'm so glad of this quiet moment with you.
Likewise, I'm delighted to...
I know everything, Mr. Archer. My child has told me all you have done for her. Your wise advice, your courageous firmness.
Madame Olenska exaggerates. I simply gave her a legal opinion as she asked me to.
Ah, but in doing it, you were the unconscious instrument of providence. Little did you know that at that very moment I was being appealed to from the other side of the Atlantic. By the Count himself. My poor, mad, foolish Cholensky, who asks only to take her back on her own terms.
Good God.
He casts himself at her feet. I have his letter here.
Has she seen it?
Time. I must have time. I know my Ellen. Haughty, intractable. Shall I say, just a shade, unforgiving?
To forgive is one thing. But to go back to that hell?
Ah, yes, so she describes it. My sensitive child. But on the material side, Mr. Archer, if one may stoop to consider such things, do you know what she is giving up?
She knows nothing yet. Of this letter?
Nothing yet. The truth is, Mr. Archer, I have been waiting to see you. From the moment I heard of your influence over her, I hoped it might be possible to count on your support.
To make her go back. I would rather see her dead.
Do you prefer her to accept that man's flowers, Mr. Archer? To forget that she is a married woman?
What are you two plotting together, Amadora?
We were saying, my dear, that here's a beautiful bouquet to surprise you with.
Oh, who is ridiculous enough to send me a bouquet? Oh. I am not going to a ball. I am not a girl engaged to be married. Some people are ridiculous. Nastasia, vieni qua. Here, throw this in the dustbin.
Ma signora.
Oh, va bene. No, it is not the fault of the poor flowers. Carry them down to Mr. Winsett's, who dined here. His wife is ill. They may give her pleasure. Here, put my cloak over you and fly. I want the thing out of the house immediately.
Mr. Archer has waited patiently while you were dressing, darling.
Yes, I gave you time enough. My hair wouldn't go. But that reminds me, you'll be late at the Blenkers. Mr. Archer, will you put my aunt in the carriage?
Yes.
Mind the carriages to be back for me at 10. Well, what do you think of me in a temper?
It makes me understand what your aunt has been saying about you.
Oh, Medora is incorrigibly romantic.
Is your aunt's romanticism always consistent with accuracy?
What has she been telling you?
Well, she says the Count Olenski has asked her to persuade you to go back to him.
Oh, she's been hinting about a letter. Medora's hints.
Is it at your husband's request that she's arrived here suddenly?
She told me she had a spiritual summons from Dr. Carver. I'm afraid she's going to marry him. Poor Medora, there's always someone she wants to marry.
But you do believe she has a letter from your husband?
After all, it was to be expected.
Your aunt believes you'll go back.
Many cruel things have been believed of me.
Ellen, I'm sorry.
You are horribly nervous. The Wellands are unreasonable about your marriage. I thought May too intelligent to be the slave of such absurd conventionality.
She is too intelligent.
Well, then I don't understand.
She thinks I want to marry her at once to get away from someone that I care for more.
But if she thinks that, why isn't she in a hurry too?
She insists all the more on a long engagement to give me time to...
Time to give her up for the other woman?
If I want to.
That is noble.
Yes, but it's ridiculous.
Ridiculous? Because you don't care for anyone else.
Because I don't mean to marry anyone else.
Ah. This other woman. Does she love you?
Oh, there's no other woman. I mean, the person that May was thinking of is... was never...
Then why are you in such haste?
There's your carriage.
Yes, I suppose I must be going.
You're going to Mrs. Struthers?
Yes. I must go where I'm invited. I should be too lonely.
May guess the truth. There is another woman, but not the one she thinks.
Don't play the lover with me. Too many men have done that.
I've never played at anything with you. But you are the woman that I would have married if it had been possible for either of us.
You say that when it's you who've made it impossible?
I've made it impossible.
You. Isn't it you who made me give up divorcing because you showed me how selfish it was? How one must sacrifice oneself to spare one's family the scandal. And because my family was going to be your family, I did what you told me. I've made no secret of having done it for you.
Good God, I thought...
You thought?
Well, there are things in that letter.
My husband's letter?
Yes.
I had nothing to fear from that letter. All I feared was to bring notoriety on the family, on you and May.
Good God. Ellen, what madness. Why are you crying? Nothing's done that can't be undone. I'm still free, and you're going to be.
Oh, my poor Newland. I suppose this had to be, but it doesn't in the least alter things.
It alters the whole of life for me.
No, it can't. You're engaged to May Welland, and I'm married.
Nonsense. We've no right to lie to other people or to ourselves. Do you see me marrying May after this?
You say that because it's the easiest thing to say at this moment, not because it's true. In reality, it's too late to do anything but what we've both decided on.
I don't understand you.
You haven't yet guessed how you've changed things for me. From the first, long before I knew all you'd done.
All I'd done?
Yes. I was perfectly unconscious at first that people here thought I was a dreadful sort of person. They even refused to meet me at a dinner. I found that out afterwards. And how you'd insisted on announcing your engagement at the Beaufort Ball, so I might have two families to stand by me instead of one. From the very beginning, I felt there was no one as kind as you. No one who gave me reasons that I understood for doing what at first seemed so hard. The good people didn't convince me. I felt they'd never been tempted. But you understood. You had felt the world outside tugging at one with all its golden hands, and yet you hated happiness bought by disloyalty and indifference. I'd never known such goodness before.
Ellen, I'm not worthy to kiss the hem of your dress.
Don't let us undo what you've done. I can't go back now to that other way of thinking. I can't love you unless I give you up.
And Beaufort? Is he to replace me? He's waiting for you now, Mrs. Struthers. Why don't you go to him?
I shall not go out this evening. Tell the carriage to go and fetch the Signora Marchesa.
Si, Signora.
Why the sacrifice?
Since you tell me that you're lonely, I've no right to keep you from your friends.
I shan't be lonely now. I was lonely, I was afraid. But you have chased away the emptiness. Now when I turn back into myself, I'm like a child going at night into a room where there's always a light.
I don't understand you.
Yet you understand May.
May is ready to give me up.
3 days after you've entreated her on your knees to hasten your marriage.
She refused. That gives me the right.
Oh, you've taught me what an ugly word that is.
If we do this now, it will be worse afterwards. Worse for everyone.
No. No. No.
Telegram, Signora.
It's from May. Darling Ellen, Granny's telegram successful. Papa and Mama agree marriage after Easter. I'm telegraphing Newland. I'm too happy for words and love you dearly. Your grateful May. There you are. You're to be married in a month.